All right, thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today, my guest is Zamari Jones. He's the man behind this really wonderful Steely Dan fan account on Instagram, at dealing.stan67. You know, for the first few years of doing Steely Dan stuff, I was really only on Twitter. But then when Twitter got taken over and more or less ruined by a certain infamous billionaire, I decided it would be nice to have a sort of second home for my Steely Dan stuff. So I created an Instagram account at GoodDanTakes and discovered all the Steely Dan stuff going on there, all those accounts. And the very best of these I found was Dealing Stan, was Zamari's account. You know, he's kind of like the mayor of Steely Dan Instagram. It's not only a great aggregator, but he also posts a lot of really interesting, obscure, and new to me Dan content. You know, plus funny memes and bits and stuff. It's just great. And he clearly has a tremendous knowledge of Steely Dan and the history and the lore and everything. So I connected with him on Instagram, and we did a Gaucho Amigos chat. And I enjoyed meeting the man behind an account that, in a short period of time, has already become one of my favorite sort of internet hubs for Steely Dan stuff. I'm trying something new today. I'm going to actually come back in at the end of our conversation to talk about FM pods, the subscription option, and premium content. That's going to start up soon in October. So if you're interested in hearing about that, stick around through the end of the episode and all will be explained. All right. Without further ado, this is my conversation with Zamari Jones, AKA Dealing Stan. Enjoy.
I was at my grandparents' house and I guess I was helping them clean out one of their rooms or whatever. And then I found this Steely Dan. I think it might have been, I guess, one of the Citizen discs or something. I forgot, but it might have just been burned on like a random CD because it just said, it just had Steely Dan written on it in like Sharpie or something. But yeah, I grabbed that and I said, can I have it? And they say, yeah. So I was staying at their house. So later that night, I put it in the CD player. And then immediately, I think Bodhisattva came on, and I'm just sitting there, you know, grooving. And I'd never heard that one before.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, wow, I might need to check out all of Steely Dan. So the next day, I went out on the porch. I put in my earbuds, and I started on Can't Buy a Thrill and went through the entire discography
wow.
in one sitting. So, and I don't know how to describe it, but it was a pretty crazy euphoric roller coaster of an experience. I think some of the highlights I remember were Bodhisattva and Green Earrings and Royal Scam. I remember Bodhisattva in particular, like, man, it was this like overwhelming, like a euphoric experience I'd never felt before. yeah. And
was it the guitar solos? Did that bowl you over?
The guitar solos, you know, that kind of synth flute part that comes in. I remember at that exact part, that's when I was just like, oh my God, I was just like blown back. And yeah, I just had never felt that type of feeling from music that strongly before.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
So it was like a revelatory experience. You went through the whole discography and then like a few songs are just blowing your mind in a way that you had never, ever experienced before.
Yeah, pretty much. And I felt the same thing with Royal Scam, the guitar solo in Green Earrings, you know, where it has that like little keyboard lick or whatever, then it goes straight into the guitar solo. That was like amazing. Like I'd never heard anything like this before, you know. Not only had I never felt this way, I'd never heard anything like this before. So it was pretty crazy. Yeah.
So after that day, you were like, okay, these are my guys.
Just... Yeah, I think after that listening session, they became my favorite band immediately. You know,
really overnight, pretty much. They went to number one.
Yeah, honestly, it was just
Yep.
a wild thing I'd never felt before. So, yeah.
Do you remember what else you were listening to right before then or around that time?
Oh yeah, I think the Beatles were my number one at that point, before I had that whole experience. But yeah, the Beatles, I listened to everything. I still listen to everything for the most part, but the Beatles were my number one at that point. And ever since then, the Dan have been at the top. So, and I don't think they'll get removed anytime soon. So.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, the Beatles are, I feel like, a lot of people's, first loves or entry point. I mean, they were for me too. Like, my dad
And
played me the Beatles when I was like a toddler. I don't remember a time when I didn't know the Beatles. They were my kind of entryway into all music. And yeah, it took me a much longer time to come around to Steely Dan, but I made it at some point.
it's funny also how the Beatles were my number one, but they have such a lower skill set compared to the musicians on the Dan songs, and then immediately the Dan becomes my number one. They're just so different, so it's pretty funny.
Although they
But
do have
yeah,
one thing in very one thing in common that they both have is that they started off as a live band and then transitioned to being a studio only affair where they were kind of the band was just making albums. That's what the band was. It didn't exist as a band
true.
in a live form. And I think the Beatles starting with, was it Rubber Soul? Until the end, they were just like making records. That's what they were. But more so than the Dan, it was the four guys, right? It wasn't just this sort of cavalcade of session musicians and whoever else Donald and Walter wanted to bring along. So
Yeah, and if you believe the rumor of Bernard Purdy
I
recording, have you heard the rumor of him recording with the Beatles instead of Ringo?
heard this. I don't think it's true, but I've heard murmurs.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
Yeah, I don't
the
believe it either.
it's kind of like the Phil Hartman Designed Asia thing. It's like one of those
Oh God.
myths that seems to persist.
I still see people say, "Oh my God, Phil Hartman, he did the cover for Asia." I see that on Facebook groups still to this day. And I just comment up there, "No, actually." But I mean, like I didn't know Wendell at first. So, there's always people getting into the Dan and learning different things and getting these rumors dispelled and whatnot. So, I take it easy.
Does it bother you when people get stuff wrong with Steely Dan? Do you feel the need that, like, no, they need to know the facts
Well,
here?
yeah, if someone's wrong, I'll tell them, but I'm not like, well, actually, blah, 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 you're dumb. I know a few people on Facebook that are like that. Some of the boomers, if you want to call them that are kind of rude and, but yeah, I'm not mean with it. People, there are people that don't know something, so I'll just tell them what it is and move on, I don't really see a reason to be mean about it. Just tell them how it is and then keep going.
So you decided Steely Dan is your favorite band. Kind of where'd you take it from there? Did you just keep listening to the records? Or how did your kind of hardcore Steely Dan fandom, how did that kick in?
Well, I'm trying to remember when I had that whole, experience with the CD. I think that was like 2020, and then 2021, April 16th to be exact, is when I started the Dealing Stand page. And yeah, ever since I started the Instagram page, that's when I really started learning all these things, because I'm talking to people in the community and researching stuff. But yeah, when I started the Dealing Stand page, that's when I really started getting like hardcore. And I started that actually from trying to think of the page's name. I think it was Steely Stan. Yeah, it's like a meme page on Instagram. They still post things from time to time, very rarely now,
Yeah.
but I started posting Steely Dan memes because of them. And you know, it was just funny seeing their memes because I was like, oh man, I didn't know people made memes about, you know, my favorite band. So it was like, oh, I got, you know, I got to get in on this. So I started the page, and I actually started posting only memes at first, whereas, you know, now I've kind of slowed down. I post, you know, concert clips and stuff, everything now. But yeah, when I started this Dealing Stand page, that's when I really started learning more and getting into different like areas that I would have never probably have gotten into if I just stayed away from the whole internet community aspect of the group. So yeah, I love talking to people online. It's just really fun because with the Beatles, I just listened to them. I wasn't involved in any like online groups or anything like that. So it's definitely a whole new experience. And I mean, I've been doing it for like 2 years now, so I feel like at home, you know. But yeah, it's great. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely found a great niche because, like I said, like you've done incredible amounts of like archival work on this band, and you probably didn't even realize you were doing it. You were just like, oh, this is a cool band, and I'm gonna post some memes, see what I can find on YouTube and here and there. But like, I scroll down your page, and it's like one of the better archives of this band's history that I have found on the internet. So like, it's incredible that you've put this all together in a couple of years. It's amazing what you can do on the internet these days. I kind of had a similar experience. Like, you know, for years I actually thumbed my nose at Steely Dan. I didn't really like them because that was kind of the conventional wisdom among kind of music heads, was you didn't like Steely Dan. Like, they were uncool. They were a boomer band. They were too slick. They had no kind of punk attitude. So I didn't listen to them for years, you know. And I played music and I listened to tons of other bands, but I didn't dig on the Dan. And then around 2010 or 11, I started getting into them. I heard Babylon Sisters, and that kind of changed things for me because that was a different side of the Dan I had heard. I had only heard the classic rock hits. I hadn't heard Gaucho, so.
Yeah, man, it's amazing. I've been listening to them for a few years now, but still, just to look at how they started, and still, if they wanted to now, can do some type of classic rock type of stuff, and it's just so good. But then they can go into this whole other realm of like Babylon Sisters, that type of smooth, jazzy, complex R&B type stuff. It's amazing. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, they did the song Asia. I feel like if a band did something that great and fans responded to it and people responded to it, you know, that album sold millions of records, they would try to do the same thing again, but they never did. They never did anything like that song Asia ever again. They kind of did it once and moved on. And I have huge respect for Donald and Walter for doing that. They rarely repeated themselves. They're like Haitian Divorce, another one. Like doing a kind of like sleazy reggae. I don't even know what genre that song is. I guess it's reggae, but it's kind of their own thing. And yeah, there are other songs, you know, especially in the Walter solo discography, there are some songs that bear a little bit of resemblance to that one. But I feel like, you know, Steely Dan never did another song like that. So, like you said, I
Yeah,
think they were very adventurous.
and when, you know, people ask them, I know I've seen Donald respond to this. I don't know if I've seen Walter, but when people say, what's your favorite album you've done? They always say it's the most recent one. You know, they're always trying to move into this new you know, realm of progressing their music or whatever. I don't know. They definitely have a really obvious evolution through their discography from the classic rock, and then, you know, whatever the hell Asia and all that is. And then they get into this more beat and groove oriented type stuff with the reunion albums. Yeah, honestly, kind of started on a Kamakuri ad. That's where it really started, the, you know, more groove and beat oriented stuff. But yeah, I also admire how they just keep moving forward, you know.
Yeah, I know Donald and Walter are kind of particularly, or at least Donald was, or Donald is. I know that Donald is particularly defensive about Everything Must Go. I saw some clip where he's saying that he felt the album was underrated. And I appreciate how you really
kind of cover all the bases with Steely Dan. You don't only talk about, you know, the big albums. You kind of do everything from, I mean, you go all the way, you know, you do all the solo albums. I see Circus Money memes. I see memes about, you know, the kind of the lost Donald years, you know, the '80s singles that are kind of.
Yeah, I love the era.
Yeah. Any favorites from the '80s? The kind of post Nightfly, pre Comic Curiod, because you cover a lot of that on your page.
I mean, I love all of it. I know recently I did a Shanghai Confidential meme or whatever. I mean, it was just a kid dancing to the, you know, to the song or whatever. But yeah, I guess I say my favorite song from that weird kind of period is probably Century's End, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I love all of them. It's that whole area is just has such a weird kind of mysterious vibe to it, you know.
Yeah.
Because he was just doing these random weird kind of odd jobs and stuff, you know, film soundtracks, producing. What was it? I forgot the name of it, but it was some type of gospel play or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I just love that whole time period where he was just doing this stuff in between albums and just figuring out what he was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, he claims he had writer's block or that he, you know, sat out the decade. I think he actually said that.
Writer's block my ass. He wrote some hits during that period. Century's End. I mean, Shanghai Confidential. That's just, wow. It's crazy to say that's Donald Fagen right there. That's a pretty wild piece.
Yeah, and I mean, for years, when I was, you know, just kind of slowly getting into Steely Dan, because for years, for me, it was kind of a solo journey, or, you know, I had a couple friends. I didn't know about the internet world of Steely Dan. I wasn't taking part of in any community. But, like, I listened to a random Steely Dan live show, and they played True Companion. And I was like, what is this song? I've never heard of this. Like, what album is this on? Is this on a Donald solo album or Steely Dan? And then I find out he did a song for the movie Heavy Metal. It's like, I had no idea this even existed. And then you find out there's almost an album's worth of random songs that Donald, you know, did between Nightfly and Comic Curiod, and you go down that rabbit hole. So, yeah, it's fun because it seems to never end. I mean, it seems like there's always something new that I find.
Yeah, and you already know there's tons of songs that Donald and or Walter have, you know, probably recorded a bit, you know, demos and stuff that we probably will never hear. So yeah, it's truly never ending, and we'll never know all of the songs, unfortunately. But
I was recently disturbed by it was this clip where Gary Katz is talking about his work on Gaucho, and he was like, yeah, so many times we worked on tracks and then Donald and Walter you know, got people to play them and they didn't like how they came out, so we threw them away. It's like, what were those songs? I mean, they were probably recycled, at least a few of them, you know, over the years. But yeah, there's that sort of air of mystery that kind of stems from Donald and Walter's own, you know, strange working methods or, you know, exacting standards that, you know, we may never hear or never know even what they are. It's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, when I saw that clip, I felt the same way. I was like, wow, so there's, you know, stuff beyond what we know are lost songs, you know. There's stuff that we probably don't even know the names of. Man, it's crazy just to think how hard they worked and just how much material they put out. Not only on the albums, but just the outtakes and demos and, you know, things that we don't even know about. It's crazy. And all of it is good, you know, the outtakes, the demos, all the stuff I've heard, I love, you know.
And that's a big source of inspiration for you, is to find stuff that maybe people don't know about or is slightly under the surface, right?
Yeah, that's why, well, in the beginning, I didn't want to do the Danbolt channel. I don't know why, because I started with my friend Oscar. He actually proposed the idea to me, saying we could upload stuff, because I was just uploading stuff on well, making Instagram posts, and it's only but so good to upload several minute videos on Instagram. It's much better to do it on YouTube. So he was like, "Hey, let's do this channel." And so, yeah, I chose the name, and he made the account, and then we started uploading stuff. And yeah, that was really the main inspiration, just getting stuff out there that people don't know about in a better way than putting it on Instagram. So yeah, I really love giving people these this insight into these different things that they probably would never have heard of or seen if I wouldn't have uploaded it to YouTube. Not to make it seem like I'm the Messiah or the king or anything, but I've gotten lots of comments where people are like, "Wow, I've never heard of this. I've never seen this. Wow." So yeah, it's really fun. It's really fun.
Yeah, I mean, you've unlocked things that I did not know about. For example, I can just reel off a few examples. They did a reggae version of Any World that they perform live.
Yeah, it's really interesting how they rearrange a lot of their songs for the live setting and make it more interesting. A great example being Reeling in the Years, that rearrangement. But what do you think about it, the Reeling in the Years rearrangement?
Oh, I prefer it actually. I love the jazzy reelin', as I call it. Yeah. I mean they started doing that, I think, from the very beginning in the 93 reunion shows, right? They started
Yeah,
doing the
and
jazzy
it's
reelin'.
funny because I know a lot of people are probably like, "Oh, snap, we're gonna hear Reeling in the Years," and then you get this weird little opening keyboard riff and these jazzy horns, and they're probably like, "Oh, what is this?" But yeah, I love it too. It's really interesting and has this really cool vibe to it. It's really solid. They're great at rearranging some of their songs. There's only a few songs that I don't like where they rearranged it. I think those were Jack of Speed. They did like a weird kind of shuffle version. I think that was only on Rarities Night. And that, oh God, that was atrocious. Walter sang that was in 2011. Yeah, and there's one other shuffle version that they've done that I didn't like. I can't remember what song it was, but they've done like at least three shuffle versions of songs where they're just like, "Oh, just play the original." Like,
Yep.
I don't know.
Well, for Jack of Speed, there was actually a the original version of Jack of Speed was a Walter-led version, which was the shuffle version. I guess they've reworked it a few times, but I know in like before Two Against Nature, even they were touring with the Walter version, which had different lyrics and Walter was taking lead. But
Yeah, I like that one, but
okay, you like
they
that one?
did something else in 2011. They for Rarities Night, they did some weird kind of rearrangement to it where it wasn't just Walter's, vocals, because that night he didn't sound too good. I mean, he only sounds but so good in general, but it was something with the music, like the way they rearranged the beat and stuff. It just wasn't good. I didn't like it that much.
Yeah, and I feel like Donald always likes to keep things interesting. He doesn't like to just do the same thing over and over again, probably for his own sanity and his own, creative, state of mind or ethos. He's constantly tinkering with the arrangements of his songs. And I feel like, especially for Can't Buy a Thrill, an album that I think he and Walter have said they basically don't even really like anymore, those songs, if they're going to do them live, they're going to do something with them. So, like, they do the jazzy reelin', Dirty Work. They don't, the Danettes take lead on it, or I think they did a Midnight Cruiser with Walter on lead, for example. I think they were briefly touring with that. So, for that album, one of the most interesting rearrangements that I've heard is the one they were doing for Here at the Western World. I don't know if you've heard that, but they do a
Oh yeah.
fast version.
I've kind of come around to that a little bit.
Yep.
I despised it at the beginning, but I think it's all right. That's how I feel now. I think it's not bad, but
Yep.
I don't love it either. I still prefer the original, but I think it was 2006 they were mainly doing that. Yeah, I wasn't really vibing with it in the beginning, but yeah, it's all right.
Well, the original recording of that song is so like perfect to begin with. It's like, why mess with a
Majestic.
good thing? It's such an amazing song. And that was like, I think part of what led me down the Dan hole, if you will, is like, I heard the first seven albums because that's what everybody hears and that's what everybody knows. And I love that. But then I heard IGY and I was like, what? Like, there's more of this and it's like even better. This is incredible. And then I heard, Here at the Western World. And then I hear, some of the Kamakuriad and some of these, kind of albums that people don't ever talk about. Like you don't hear people talking really about Walter Becker's solo albums ever. I mean, 11 Tracks of Black is a really interesting album and people never talk about it.
And I don't think I there's nothing wrong with not liking every single thing that they release. I mean, I'll say this, I enjoy, and this is no exaggeration, I enjoy every single Steely Dan song, demo, outtake, official, everything. So I think that's great enough. So I think I should be kind of excused for not loving 11 Tracks of Whack. Yeah, there are a few songs out there that I really like, but overall I'm not too big a fan of the album, but I would say it's an all right album. It's fine. I like it. This is
I mean,
but
it's certainly a weird album, and I feel like what's so cool about it is getting to see what Walter did on his own. And I know Donald, helped out, I'm sure, quite a bit with the putting those songs together, but it's really from Walter. So just to have an album that is kind of a pure Walter experience,
Yeah, and
it's just really fascinating.
I read this interview recently, I think like 2 or 3 months ago, where Walter was basically talking about his 11 Tracks of Whack. I think it was around that time that it released, and he was saying, speaking on why it sounds so different from what you would expect from Steely Dan or any of the members. And he was basically saying, not only did he want to try to do his own style and stuff, but he's not as musically proficient in terms of making complex harmonies and stuff as Donald is. And he was basically just it seemed like he was kind of talking down to himself a little bit, and I kind of felt bad. But at the same time, he was speaking truth, because I mean, a lot of Walter's stuff, it's not as dense harmonically and whatnot as Donald's stuff, like the harmonies and all that. So yeah, I mean, it's true, and it kind of sucks to see Walter acknowledging his own incapabilities, but I mean, it is what it is. I think that's why I like Donald's stuff more. I prefer the more complex and more smooth and R&B oriented stuff, compared to what, well, compared to 11 Tracks of Whack. But Circus Money, I enjoy that whole album. I just love all the grooves and stuff. So there's nothing wrong with that. But 11 Tracks of Whack is where it's kind of weird for me.
Okay. So that's if you had to pick one to, you know, if there's one album in the whole thing that you don't love, it's probably that one, right?
Yeah, the entire Dan and solo discographies together, 11 Tracks of Whack would be my least favorite, okay, to be honest.
One of the biggest revelations of things that I found through you was you posted a bootleg cut of Donald Fagen performing Sign and Stranger with Pat Metheny on guitar.
Oh, yeah. That was like the Libby Titus New York Nights days, like just before the Rock and Soul Review took off. And then, of course, that led into the 93 reunion and Steely Dan tour. There's still some recordings that I have from those New York night days that I still want to upload at some point. And they're pretty cool. I don't know if that one. Well, no. Yeah, I think that Pat Metheny one has pretty low quality audio. But there's some of them where I have the direct soundboard, so it sounds pretty neat. It's not necessarily mixed great, but it's, you know, audio straight from the soundboard. Those are pretty cool.
I'm a big fan of I'm also a big fan of Pat Metheny's work in general. Yeah. And I didn't know the two ever did anything together, so when I saw that, I like freaked out. I said, wait a minute, Donald Fagen played Steely Dan songs with Pat Metheny? I guess it was just the one, or I think they did a handful of them, but I kind of freaked out. And to hear Pat Metheny riffing, to hear his very, for me, something that is incredibly specific and one of my favorite guitar tones and styles, to hear him doing that on that song was like, I can't tell you how incredible that was for me to hear that. I mean, it was just
it is really cool. And it makes me wish that he actually toured with them in 93, because he was supposed to, but you know, they called him at the last minute or whatever. And can you imagine that? Pat Metheny and Steely Dan reunion tour or whatever. That would have been mind-blowing. There have been a few people like who have emailed me stuff like, oh, you should check this out or you should upload it. Like there was one Rock and Soul Review concert I've uploaded that one of my friends sent me on Instagram, actually. And that was pretty cool because I'd seen clips from it. It's like this black and white A&E TV special that they did in the early 90s. And I was like, wow, I've never seen the whole, you know, broadcast. So gladly took that. Well, I haven't uploaded it yet, but I plan to.
I'm not sure. I've seen that.
There's some clips on YouTube, like Michael McDonald singing Lonely Teardrops, which he does an amazing rendition of. And then Donald does Pretzel Logic. One that's not on YouTube, but is in the full broadcast, is Donald doing Chain Lightning and, you know, playing his melodica, doing those little licks and stuff. Yeah, I haven't uploaded it yet because I sent it to Dan Belcher, who does these great audio remasterings of concerts. And, you know, he has a bunch of concerts in his queue that he's going to plan to upload. So who knows when he'll get around to the concert I sent him. But I don't know, I might upload it eventually just to have the original on YouTube. And then his, you know, remastering will come at some point. But yeah, either I'll get stuff by email, I'll find it on Discord or Facebook. Those are the main places for the most part.
Yeah, it's funny because you don't, so I feel like some Steely Dan fans, they don't care that much about the live stuff because it's not, the audio quality is never going to be, you know, they see Steely Dan as a studio entity, right? The live thing is just, you know, it's not important to them, but like I said, I'm coming to Steely Dan later. So I've sifted through years of listening to really shitty sounding bands, you know, indie rock and kind of lo-fi. That was kind of my musical upbringing. So for me, you know, something that has the sound quality of like the, for example, the Simon Stranger with Pat Metheny, that's like right in my wheelhouse. So I'm not in it, you know, in terms of my interest in Steely Dan, I'm not in it necessarily as an audiophile. I'm in it for kind of the songs and for Donald and for the lyrics and just obviously I love how clear it sounds and you know that's a part of it. And obviously the incredible attention and care that they put into those albums is definitely a factor, but it's not, I don't draw the line there. You know, I love hearing like even the rough and tumble sound of like those early Becker and Fagen demos from the 60s. Those are like, that's like a treasure trove for me because some of those songs are great. So,
Yeah, me as well.
yeah.
I guess I'm kind of an audiophile. I mean, who doesn't want a nicely mixed and great sounding record? But yeah, I also enjoy listening to those old staticky rough demos and you know, the Pat Metheny recording, for example. I'm perfectly fine with that. Of course, it would be nice if it was in higher quality, but I'm fine with listening to stuff like that. So I guess I'm not a true Steely Dan fan, I guess, but you know, yeah,
Well,
I'm
there's
fine with
no.
listening to rough stuff.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say, you know, true Steely Dan fan. It's like now that there's this whole younger generation who's getting into them, it's like kind of redefining what that term means. Because for years, the stereotype of a Steely Dan fan was usually a guy, usually a man, usually, you know, in his 50s or 60s, probably white with a ponytail. You know, drives a Mazda Miata. Like there's a certain type of guy that people, you know, but now it's totally like the floodgates have opened, like with the internet and with all the Steely Dan stuff that's going on Twitter and these kind of social networks, I feel like it's really evolved. So which is cool to see because I know when I was, that was one of the, another deterrent of getting into them was just being like, oh man, like the Steely Dan fan base is just a bunch of old guys. Like I don't want to be part of that, you know.
Yeah, I've always been into older music, and I've always been, you know, kind of a, I wouldn't say outcast, but in terms of my musical taste, I've never been able to, and I still can't really relate to, you know, my peers, people who are, you know, listening to trap music and, you know, Playboi Carti and DaBaby. You know, I don't really listen to all of that at all.
Who are some other bands from the Steely Dan kind of era that you're big into besides Steely Dan? Anyone?
There's tons of artists. Recently, I've been becoming a really big Zappa fan. Oh my God. He's really, I honestly think he might be like one of my top artists in general right now.
Really?
Steely Dan is still number one, but I think
Yeah.
Zappa might be like number two or three. I mean, I don't really keep track of rankings and all that, but in general, right now, and if I were to make a top ever ranking list, he would probably be up there. Yeah, I think I started getting into him like late last year.
Okay.
It started with this song called Inca Roads, which is seems to be like a really popular song to get people into Zappa because it's great groove and stuff, but it also has a lot of weirdness as you would expect from Frank Zappa.
That's my
Yeah, Frank
favorite Frank
Zappa.
Zappa song, actually, because I'm also a Zappa fan and I love George Duke as well. So to hear
Oh
him
yeah, man.
take the lead is great. I love that song.
Yeah, I played that song for my goddad because he's a
Yeah.
really big George Duke fan, and I was like, Gu guess who's on lead vocals? And he was like, who? I was like, George Duke, and he was like, oh snap, that's crazy. But
Yeah.
yeah, he likes the song too. He's definitely weirded out by some of the stuff I've played from Zappa because some of it can be a little like, wow, I can't believe he said that. But yeah, I'm really into Frank Zappa, Stevie Wonder. I love him. Like, there are whole albums from him that I think are just amazing.
Yeah. So I know you're new to Steely Dan, but did you get to see them live?
Yeah, I saw them last year, July 15th at the Altria Theater in Richmond, Virginia. So that was pretty cool. There's this guy on Facebook that runs one of the Steely Dan Facebook groups, and you know, I guess we're pretty cool. And he got me in contact with Roger Rosenberg, who's the Dan's baritone sax player. And I actually got to meet him at the show. So that was really cool for a first time seeing the Dan. And we talked for like probably 20 minutes, and he was really gracious. So yeah, that was really cool.
Did he know about your Instagram account at all or no?
No. And you know, I posted some pretty edgy memes in the past on that account, so I'd rather him not. I mean, you'd have to scroll back very far, so I mean, it's fine. And for the most part, I post pretty tame stuff now, so it really doesn't matter. But yeah, he doesn't know about it.
Have you connected with anyone else in the band? Like, has anyone else, you know, from the band noticed your account, or have you talked to or connected with anyone?
Well, a few of the band members follow the page on my page on Instagram, the Dealing Stan,
yep.
The pianist, Jim Beard, LaTanya, well, two of the Danettes, Royce Jones. I mean, they don't necessarily like every one of my posts, but they followed me. Keith Carlock, he's liked some of my posts and cool. Followed me and stuff. Yeah, it's really cool seeing that they enjoy seeing, you know, the enthusiasm from fans and stuff, and they engage and whatnot. But Michael Linhart, he's probably the most active on Instagram. He posts like every day, several things a day. And he's tagged me in some posts and stuff.
That's cool.
He never answers any of my questions or, you know, responds to stuff I text him on Instagram from time to time, which is fine, you know. But he does tag me in some things. So.
Yeah, I imagine in a way he kind of represents Donald because, you know, they've worked so closely together for so long. And also, if you look at Sunken Condos, I mean, he was basically the closest thing to like a right-hand man. You know, he's number two at this point in terms of Steely Dan. Do you, last couple questions. I was going to ask if you play an instrument, but then I remembered, I think I saw you actually did a cover, or at least you posted your own version of Yellow Peril, which is one of those early Becker and Fagen songs.
Yeah, that's the keyboard in the background right there. I did that with the Wendell samples that SimC released recently. I bought the Wendell sample pack and I was like, let me put something together that's a little creative. So, you know, I just learned the song by ear real quick. And then I think I posted it like the next day. And it was a pretty fun little kind of groovy thing to post and record. I've done a few others too. I've done Your Gold Teeth 2, Home at Last, Babylon Sisters, and Kid Charlemagne was the first one I did. So yeah, it's pretty fun to learn these songs, even though I probably have all the chords wrong. But, I mean, it sounds good, so.
All right, we're back. That was Zamari Jones. And this is also him playing along to Home at Last. Hope you enjoyed that. Don't forget to follow Zamari on Instagram at dealing.stan67. And let's talk about FM pods and the premium content. So as you're probably aware, Gaucho Amigos is now part of the FM podcast network. You can still access the podcast through Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get podcasts, but that's the home base. And if you're listening through Apple, you've probably already noticed there's a subscription option. You can subscribe to FM Plus for $4.99 a month and unlock premium content. And that gives you the premium content for all of the podcasts on the network. And, you know, one of the reasons I wanted Gaucho Amigos to join the FM podcast network is that I kind of share the same philosophy as the other podcasters there, in the sense that, you know, the podcast is really a hobby, a labor of love. You know, this whole Steely Dan project has pretty much been that for me since the beginning. But it would be nice to have some money to support that hobby. You know, there are costs involved in keeping this going. Frankly, I don't have a lot of money lying around to invest more in it myself. So basically, if you subscribe, you're helping to keep the podcast going and hopefully make it better. Because I'll take the money I make from the subscriptions and put that back into the podcast, whether that's buying a better microphone, paying a friend or a freelancer to help with the editing or the audio, you know, maybe paying for travel so that I can do an in-person interview every once in a while. You know, basically, the more money I have to work with this thing, the better it can be. So that's why I'm asking listeners to subscribe. Now let's talk about what you get when you subscribe, the perks. First of all, what I'll call the main show, you know, the 50-minute or so interviews I do with guests, that is going to remain free for everyone. I will be cutting back a little bit on how many of those I do. I'll be putting up either two or three a month going forward. But if you want more of the podcast, you can subscribe and you get premium episodes. And here's what that will entail, at least for the first few months. And this is going to start next month in October. Once a month, I will put up a 90-minute bonus episode, which is a combination of bonus material from the interviews I've done, plus whatever other Steely-related audio content I choose to incorporate. For some of the interviews I've done, there ends up being quite a bit of extra conversation that gets edited out. So in these premium episodes, that's the place where I'll share that. For a few of them, you know, there's basically an entire, you know, part two, second episode. Maybe we talked for 2 hours and I only ended up using material from the first hour. So in these premium episodes, that's where I'll share, you know, the bonus material. And then, you know, I'll add in other stuff. You know, maybe I'll do some sort of mailbag, listener question segment. I'll play some of my favorite kind of bootleg cuts or live rarities. I'll talk about whatever is going on in the Steely Dan world. It'll really be kind of like a Steely Dan radio show. So the subscription will give you access to those monthly premium episodes, and you'll also get early access to the main show. I'll put those up 24 to 48 hours before they are released to the masses, probably sometime on Sunday. So you'll get it before everyone else. You know, I won't announce it on Twitter or anything. So if you don't want to wait until Tuesday, you want to have it with your weekend or your Monday morning commute, subscribe and you'll get early access. Finally, starting in October, the older episodes will start going behind the paywall. I'm not going to announce it. I'm not going to do it in any particular order, but you'll see that the older episodes will only be accessible for those who have subscribed. Again, new episodes, still free and accessible for everyone. They will stay that way for a minimum of 60 days. But if you want access to the full Gaucho Amigos catalog, starting next month in October, you'll have to subscribe. So to summarize, with the subscription to FM Pods, you get one monthly 90-minute premium episode, early access to the new episodes, and full access to the entire Gaucho Amigos catalog. And of course, most importantly, you'll be supporting me, the podcast, the continued production of the pod. If you like the podcast, you want it to keep going, the best thing you can do is to subscribe. All right? If you have any questions about this, I'm always more than happy to answer them. Feel free to shoot me a DM on Twitter at BadDanTakes, or better yet these days, message me on my Instagram, which is at GoodDanTakes. And of course, don't forget to drop a rating or a review when you have a minute. Thanks for listening, and see you all next week. Bye for now.